Dead simple. The games of yesterday, today. In December of 1991, the Soviet Union was dissolved. Decades of the communist regime had seen a nuclear arms race with the United States, and the annihilation of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant that turned the city of Pripyat into an abandoned, inhospitable ghost town. Living in the shadow of Gorbachev and the long lineage of leaders before him inspired a sense of existential dread, as so much of the GDP was spent on the Union's military that the working class people communism was supposed to prop up fell into further and further poverty. The Union's legacy lives on across all art forms, but its influence on the Eastern European games industry may be the most unusual aspect of the lasting ripple effects of its existence. Games made in Russia and most former Soviet satellite states have a long and storied history. They have something of a reputation. They tend to contain a mixture of innovative and interesting gameplay ideas and storytelling themes, a unique charm caused by their often shaky translations into English and other languages, and a high volume and density of bugs and an overall lack of polish. After all, most of the famous games from this part of the world are made by small teams, operating cheaply and developing for the budget games market. A nickname exists in online circles for these projects: Slavjank. There's an array of famous examples. The most well-known one may be Stalker, loosely based on a 1979 Soviet sci-fi movie about scavengers traveling to a mysterious exclusion zone that causes mutations to people who stay too long. The movie came 7 years before the Chernobyl disaster and was itself based on a book called Roadside Picnic, released in 1972, but the shot of a nuclear power plant near the end feels nothing short of blatant if you didn't know that, and nothing short of prophetic if you did. The game is more explicit, taking place near Pripyat after a second disaster in Chernobyl that causes supernatural anomalies, with rumors abound of an entity at the center of the exclusion zone that will grant your greatest wish. It lacks polish, with undercooked survival mechanics and unusual difficulty options that make for a frustrating experience at times, but ultimately the setting the game establishes and the story it tells is engaging enough to help push through the janky bits.
Музыкант из тебя еще тот.
More recent is Herot, spelled H-R-O-T, an early access game from a solo developer who goes by Spitinyev, based out of Prague. The game is riddled with references to the real-world Soviet-era political climate of its setting. It takes place in 1986 Czechoslovakia, before the fall of communism that came from the non-violent transfer of power of the Velvet Revolution, or the Gentle Revolution, depending on who you ask. Only a chunk of what will eventually be the full game is currently playable, a small collection of levels collectively titled Kiss Me Gustav, a reference to a moment in history in which the leader of Czechoslovakia's Communist Party performed the Soviet fraternal kiss with Leonid Brezhnev, former leader of the Soviet Union. Peppered throughout the levels are signs with propaganda written on them. Here's an example from the first level.
The ultimate duty and honor of every citizen is to defend the homeland and its socialist establishment.
Besides the political references, it's also worth noting the game's unique aesthetic. It was made in a custom-built game engine by the developer, designed to mimic old software-rendered games like Quake. Just like those old games, it runs like a dream, smooth as butter. Enemies have evocative designs. A standout from these levels is the horse with a gas mask. The game is also extremely brown. It takes place in filthy sewers and washed-out industrial complexes, and has a color palette of sepias and ochres that lend a lot to the dreary atmosphere. Also, brown doesn't make a sound, seeing as it's a color, but if it did, it'd probably sound a lot like this game's shotgun. It's a serviceable enough weapon, but as we go forward and discuss other games, we'll find better examples. This one's sound is a bit lacking, but there's a better alternative later. One thing that really sticks out to me about the game is the music and the soundscape in general. 1996 saw the release of the aforementioned Quake, and with it a chilling, atmospheric soundtrack by Nine Inch Nails' Trent Reznor. The soundtrack is industrial and subtle, a standout compared to music from other games of its time. Erdot's soundtrack clearly takes a lot of influence from Quake. Listen to a short clip from the first level, and the way the noise in the level almost blends into the eerie music as it fades in. The music being good isn't a surprise. Slavjank games tend to have interesting soundtracks. Another standout in the field is the music of Pathologic, a game made by Russian developer Icepick Lodge. I've heard it described as everything from electronic throat singing to horse archer trip hop. And to me, much of the reason these games linger in my mind after playing them lies in their evocative music. Another standout aspect of Herot's gameplay is the level of interactivity everything in the game has. Playground carousels, soccer balls, basketballs, a motorcycle. So much of the game's environmental details have ways to interact with them that you don't see in a lot of games emulating this kind of retro shooter. There are also cracks in walls that can be blown up with explosive weapons, revealing secret areas and weapons for you to find. It's reminiscent of the similar secrets in older 2.5D shooters in the Build engine like Blood or Duke Nukem 3D. Small details and ideas like these make the game stand out from the crowded market of other early access retro shooters. But so far we've talked a lot about the Slav and not so much about the jank, and there is some to be found here. Shots from your weapons sometimes passing harmlessly through enemies, one gun that kills you if you use it standing in water, a double barrel shotgun that sounds a lot better, but is kind of imbalanced, messing up the game's difficulty curve. It deals with enemies that are supposed to be challenging a little too quickly and easily, for my taste. Nothing adds up to a deal-breaker for me, but people used to the extreme polish of high-budget games may need to adjust their expectations a bit before diving in. First impressions can be a bit deceiving, but make no mistake. It's not conventionally attractive, but Herot isn't a grift. The budget games market has a lot of low-quality cash-grab titles, but this is a passion project. One of an endless supply of nuclear fruit, born of the historical tree that was the Cold War and the dissolution of the Soviet Union. This part of the world is rich with weird, messy, exciting games that are low-budget enough to be endlessly creative, and I strongly urge anyone listening to check out all of the games mentioned here today. Next time we'll be discussing a more recent game that influenced Herot's development, and the things that inspired its creator along the way. Dead Simple is written, recorded, and produced by Steve Berard, with propaganda narration by Beth Fagan. Music courtesy of Alibi Music and We Star Music.